I'm going to shift gears a little and not talk so much about caregiving per se, but really about the role that social relationships can play in our lives and how they might influence our health. And in particular, I'm talking about social relationships in relation to emotional well-being, so our mental health, and specifically about middle-aged and older African-American adults. I don't have any disclosures, by the way. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Jim Ladicka, Dr. Sarah Ladicka, and Dr. Michael Thompson. We are all at UNC Charlotte. And the data I am presenting today was from an NIA grant that was awarded to the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin. So this is a secondary data analysis for us. We have long known for about a century now that social relationships have been associated with morbidity and mortality. So the more relationships you have, the less risk of mortality you have. And I think we also know that people who live in social isolation have a greater tendency to commit suicide. We've known that since Durkheim back in the 19th century. Fewer studies have looked at the quality of relationships as opposed to just the quantity of relationships. And most of those studies, in fact, focus on social ties among older adults and not so much about younger age groups. And in particular, those studies tend to focus on whites more than minority populations. So what we know about emotional and mental health of African Americans are they tend to report a lot more stress than whites for a variety of reasons, but they also report less depression, and part of this seems to be because there's a stigma about mental health and talking about mental health issues in the community. So as a result, they are less likely to have depression diagnosed and then less likely to discuss depression with their providers. But it turns out when they are diagnosed and when they do get therapy or medications, in fact, they tend to have fairly severe depression and it tends to be fairly chronic throughout their life. African Americans also report lower quality of life and worse physical health, and we know that that is associated with worse emotional health, and they tend to have a lot more chronic illnesses, which can also be associated with depression and then worse emotional health. So, sort of from a social support perspective, when we think about some of the social network characteristics of African Americans, they tend to have a highly interdependent family structure with people doing a lot of things for each other. Often multiple generations live together, both through custom and practice, but also potentially because they have limited financial resources. Demographically, they are less likely to be married, which means that other social relationships may be more important than perhaps a marital relationship. They get a lot of social support, but that also means that they might experience a greater burden because they're expected to reciprocate in some way. And they have extended families that can include non-blood or marital ties, and then they also have a church family kin. And sometimes these relationships actually get elevated to being called family. So in fact, when we ask about family relationships, it's not entirely clear whether what that tie is the result of. And we know there's some other somewhat unique factors that influence emotional health of African Americans. A lot of them do a substantial amount of caregiving because sometimes relatives are physiologically aged at earlier ages. They also experience a lot of structural and environmental factors, discrimination, higher unemployment, living in disadvantaged neighborhoods. All these things have been associated negatively with health. And but they also are very socially engaged in terms of volunteering and working in churches. And that can have a positive effect on health. So in this study, we wanted to examine really the association between relationship type, so family and friend, the frequency of contact, and the quality of the relationship with self-rated emotional health. And then we also wanted to see how social ties, how discrimination will affect that social tie emotional health relationship. This is kind of a loose conceptual model that guided our work from Berkman Glass et al. And so some of these social and structural conditions, such as discrimination and unemployment, can shape characteristics of your social network that provides opportunities for psychosocial mechanisms such as social support or social strain that can affect your health either through physiological, psychological, or behavioral pathways. So the data we're using are collected as part of the MIDAS study, which is Midlife Development in the U.S., and we are using the Milwaukee oversample. So this was a survey that was conducted among 99 census tracts in Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, and these were income stratified. Our measures were, outcome measure was self-rated emotional health. So this was asked, respondents were asked overall, how would you rate your physical health? And then they were asked, and then considering your emotional or mental health, how would you rate that? And we dichotomized better self-rated emotional health to be from good to excellent versus poor or fair. And then in terms of our primary independent variable, we looked at the quality of family support or family strain, and we looked at friend support and friend strain in addition to frequency of contact with either family or friends, and then also the absence or presence of a spouse or partner. We had several control variables, social demographic factors, and then also health factors, so physical health rating, and then current smoking, which is also associated with emotional health. And then we also included structural factors such as types of daily and lifetime discrimination experiences, their employment status, a rating of their neighborhood quality, and then we looked at whether they were currently caregiving or volunteering. So once we excluded respondents who didn't have complete data and all the variables of interest, we were left with a sample size of 569. So as you can see, these were sort of midlife people between the ages of 35 to 85, predominantly female. They reported an average daily types of discrimination events was 2.2. Most actually reported good to excellent emotional health, and about two-thirds also had good to excellent physical health. So, which doesn't mean they did not have a number of chronic conditions, but they're still reporting good health. When we look at the adjusted results, so we were doing logistic regression. When we look at the adjusted odds ratios, we can see that respondents with good family support had twice the odds of reporting better emotional health. Interestingly, having a spouse or partner was actually sort of marginally associated with lower odds of reporting better emotional health, and friend support was sort of also marginally associated with better self-rated health. When we look at some of the secondary factors, here's where we see that discrimination reduces the odds of reporting better health, as does not having a job or being retired and having to do caregiving, whereas volunteering and having good self-rated physical health contributes to better odds of reporting good emotional health. Gender also reduced the odds, and that's fairly consistent with the literature. We did also look at an interaction term between social support and discrimination. And when we put that interaction term in the model, the main effect for discrimination actually indicates that people with very low levels of family support then had a 53% reduced odds of reporting better self-rated health as opposed to the 16% we see here. So family support was definitely played a role in emotional health in terms of people who were experiencing a lot of discrimination. So even though we looked at support, strain, and frequency of contact, the only thing that was associated with better health was family support. And consistent with previous research, right, we see that daily discrimination experiences are negatively associated with emotional health. and the evidence to suggest that the support from family actually buffers daily discrimination experiences, which contributes to that literature on sort of the buffering hypothesis. We had a number of strengths. This is actually a relatively large sample of African Americans. MIDAS had numerous psychosocial and health measures that were validated. For us, it was very nice to be able to look at the effects of family and friends separately, and also to look at support and strain, which was good. Limitations, it was a mostly female sample, even though they had tried to get a sort of 50-50 balance. We weren't able to fully examine the role of marital support, as only about 38% were married or partnered. This was obviously a regional sample, so we can't really say anything about people in the South or people in the West or even people in rural areas. The discrimination measure really looked at types of discrimination events, so things such as, on a daily basis, are people rude to you? Do they slight you? Do they call you names? Things like that. But it didn't count the number of occurrences of events that people experienced in a day. And as usual with cross-sectional data, we have, you know, limited ability to talk about causality. In conclusion, we would like to see more qualitative research about the differences between support and strain and whether those change over the life course and depending upon the type of relationship. That seems important. Providers probably need to be asking a little more in that social history, what is kind of the level of emotional support that people have, and perhaps directing them to some other outlets. Given the importance of Black churches in a lot of African American lives, perhaps more interventions where churches are either providing events where families can get together, or doing more in-home visits in some way to increase the number of sort of social connections, which might be useful. I have a whole bunch of references if you can read them really fast. Questions? Yeah. They're multivariate. They were adjusted for all the other variables in the model. Yeah, it was all one big model. Yeah, sorry. The support and strain were separate scales. I think there were four items for each, which was sort of like how much does your family members listen to you? How much can you count on them? And the responses went from not at all to quite a lot, sort of on a scale of 1 to 4, and then there were sort of similar strain type items.
I'm sorry, did you look at the lower of social network size, if they have a bigger social network than what I think they have, like outside of family members, is that like contributed to strain?
There was not any data available on that.
Okay.
Yes. I'm doing another grant to look at that.
Did I get this right that the most powerful time is family time?
Yes, right. Family quality, right.
So encouraging clergy to encourage social, whatever, social time,
mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, you can't create family. You could rediscover family. But I mean, what I'm saying is that the recommended intervention would be to look to create ties that are maybe not the most meaningful ties. And I don't know whether people can rediscover, I don't know how fragmented family structures are, whether there's a lost brother and uncle or something. But it's an interesting question because all it seems the public health community can do is to recommend to build ties, but those ties are, according to your research, the weaker ones.
I think what I was suggesting you can do is to create opportunities for families to get together. So, in other words, if you have, Father-Daughter Day at church or something like that, or opportunities for reunions, if you're providing transportation for people to come to those types of events. And yeah, sometimes you're not going to be able to replace family with other types of ties. But also, given that there's some suggestion that people sort of elevate certain non-kin ties to the level of family. So even in our family support, it just asked about family members. Well, you could be thinking about somebody at your church who you consider to be your sister. And so it's unclear that that still wouldn't help. You're right, it might not be, yeah. Yeah, but that is a good question. Anything else?
It seems to mirror very well the things that we know about resiliency and healthy aging. That, you know, social supports, regardless of where it comes from, it seems to make a huge difference.
Yes.
In people's lives.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Sure.
In recommendations to improve social support, it seems to me that's a hard thing for people to act on. If they don't already have it, it's probably for some reason or something. Is there,
right.
Is there research on that? Or they have sort of recommendation being, well, increase your level of social integration. So that people are shy or whatever. So people looked into that.
You know, I think you'd really have to be doing longitudinal studies and mapping people's social ties over time. So, I mean, the problem with a lot of this cross-sectional data is it that people don't have social support? Well, is that because they're sick? They push people away? They don't have a good personality? And so, you know, if you're really not tracking sort of their lives all along, or have they always been kind of social isolates for whatever reason that is? Yeah, and I think that becomes really difficult to look at. And I don't know that a lot of research has been done on that, actually.
I think I'm trying to remember one research that we could, it was an intervention research, I think, that they intervened upon the family members of the older individual, mm-hmm. so that they could provide more social support.
Yeah, and you know, you can't, some people are difficult, and it's not fun to support them. I mean, you can't get away that some of that exists. Yeah, thank you.